Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my...
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
And hello, welcome in, Monday edition of the Hoosier Report. Glad to be with you, back with you here on the Big X Sports Radio. Thanks to Lee Kelly, who filled in for me on Friday. But I'll be back with you every day this week. It's NBA Draft Week, the NBA Draft on Thursday night in New York, in Brooklyn to be specific. Romeo Langford, the local guy on the draft board. What's he going to do? Where's he going to go? Is he going to get picked higher than what some of the mocks project him? Will he be right on target? Hopefully. I think everybody in the area hopefully wants to make sure that he doesn't slide, especially being in the green room, into the late part of the first round or the second round, which obviously is a tough thing to take. I don't think that will happen, but we're in the week. It's NBA draft week, and it's going to be fun talking about Romeo and this process with a local guy involved. According to Evan Daniels, Romeo is in Miami today to meet with the Miami Heat later today. Also, will meet with the New Orleans Pelicans this evening. And this is all according to Evan Daniels. He has visited with Cleveland, Atlanta, and Minnesota. And really, that tweet from Evan with a lot of information about five different NBA franchises that Romeo has either met with or will meet with is probably the most information I have seen on him since the Combine. We know he had a lot of meetings at the Combine. Those are, I mean, I don't want to say they're informal, but they're quicker. They're not visits to franchises or one-on-one type meetings necessarily where you travel a distance to meet with a specific player. So some interesting stuff there. Miami today, New Orleans, a meeting with the Pelicans tonight, other visits to Cleveland, Atlanta, and Minnesota. So again, Romeo Langford getting close to finding out what the future, what the next basketball step will be for him on Thursday night with the NBA draft. Let's take a look at the guest lineup, a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Segment one, as always, we'll have our Hoosier headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news. Later in the program, we'll be joined by Zach Osterman, the IU insider for the Indianapolis Star. Of course, we'll talk basketball, recruiting, and more with Zach when he is with us on the program. And later in the show, Chad Gilbert, he's Charlestown's athletic director and an IHSAA executive board member. He's always with us Mondays as well as we talk local sports headlines. And a lot to get to with Chad today because I know it's in the middle of June. High school sports, as far as the regular seasons, are over with. But still some interesting things out there to catch up with locally. And we'll do that with Chad a little bit later in the program. Let's take a look. That's the guest lineup, a service of Honey Baked Ham. Don't forget you can mention the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. You'll get $1 off your box lunch at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Let's take a look at the Hoosier headlines for the day, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news. One other Romeo Langford note, an updated draft over the weekend. The Crossover, which is a Sports Illustrated publication or website, they do a good job covering things. Their mock draft is entering version 10 in the week of the draft, and they have Romeo Langford at number 21. Out of the ones that I follow, the ones I look at, the ones I tell you about on this program, that's by far the highest that anybody has him right now. But wherever anyone else has had him, they've always been 2, 3, 4, even 5 spots lower with where they have, or higher, I guess I should say, with where they have Romeo projected to go. And that's been very consistent from the start of the mock drafts until, again, version 10, which is their most recently. So they have him number 21 to Oklahoma City. I hope and think he'll go higher than that. We'll have to wait and see until Thursday night to see who is most correct
with their Romeo Langford mock drafts and projections. Also, an interesting note, this isn't a game changer as far as the IU basketball schedule goes for the 2019-2020 season, but we inch closer and closer to being able to piece the whole schedule together. Most, if not all, of the primetime matchups in non-conference play have been announced. And, of course, we know the conference matchups, at least they'll play twice, who they'll play once at home, who they'll play once on the road. And now today, John Rothstein of CBS Sports reporting that Indiana will host Portland State on November 9th, a game obviously that will be played at Assembly Hall. So there are some other games around that level. I guess there's the potential for another big game or so, or reasonably big game or so, but we have most of it pieced together. We don't know all the dates specifically, but most of the non-conference matchups and, of course, the conference games as well in place. And again, teams like Portland State, they're not teams that here in the middle of June get you excited necessarily about the upcoming college basketball season that far away, but we are getting closer at least to knowing the full IU basketball schedule for next season. Couple other notes to pass along. IU and recruiting, it's an interesting time right now because college coaches last week and over the weekend could actually be at the NBA Players Association camp, which has always been a good event, even when it was closed to college coaches, because in this world of shoe company-dominated teams and affiliations, even for high school kids, the NBA Players Association camp kind of was able to break through that and get the best players, regardless of shoe association, together and work with former NBA players, current NBA players, not only get basketball experience on the court, but get life skills and how to manage money and how to, you know, go through, maybe handle media, things like that, if you're that upper-level prospect. So there have always been a lot of interesting things about that camp, but at the end of the day, it's camp basketball. Yeah, there's some individual stuff. Yeah, there's skill stuff. Yes, there are competitive games, but kids are placed on teams. It doesn't matter if we're talking top 100 kids in the country or we're talking kids locally or we're talking seniors or we're talking third graders. When you just randomly put kids together, it takes a while for them to settle in and to play quality basketball, and basketball that might be fun for parents and fans to watch, and definitely basketball that would be good for a recruiter, a college coach, someone on a college staff to watch. So when the NCAA made a lot of changes, the NBA Players Association camp became a live event because of the association with the NBA, and hey, it's good for kids. There's some positive things off the court that go on. They're able to get the best kids together, so it makes a lot of sense why it would be a live event for college coaches to come, but you're throwing kids together. Even though it's the top kids, you're throwing kids together, and it's not the used to each other and the camaraderie and the history that even with your travel team you might have, like these Nike EYBL and Adidas Gauntlet teams. They're put together in the spring, but they're playing everywhere. They're playing all the time. They're playing great competition. Every game matters in the leagues and the way that the system has been set up by the shoe companies as they compete for the ultimate prize at the end of the summer to be that brand's top 17 and under team. So a little different this year. There have been a number of college coaches that have kind of behind the scenes made complaints about it. We knew that it would happen. The same thing will happen next month when the NCAA has these regional camps that they've set up as a way to gather the top prospects in place of a tournament, a travel tournament in one of those live weekends. That's kind of the structure of it. They're bringing the top kids together in a camp format. So they'll be, just as there were at the NBA Players Association camp, all the college coaches will be there at these regional NCAA camps, but it just won't be the same. It won't have the same feel as the EYBL, the Nike stuff, the Adidas stuff does in July, because those teams have been playing together. They're ready for that. The environments are big. Fans come. College coaches pack in. It just becomes a special environment with kids that are ready to play basketball at a high level. Camp ball, high-level players, but just because you throw them together on a team without knowing each other or having any real practices behind each other doesn't mean it's going to turn out to be a good watching situation for coaches. So that was this weekend. There were a number of players there, mostly out of the state of Indiana, outside, I should say, of the state of Indiana, that were there participating, that Indiana, I'm sure, was watching. Indiana obviously had coaches there. to watch a lot of that event as well. But a big event as far as top-level talent goes, but as far as being able to gather a lot from it or see some really good basketball, I'm not sure. Later this month, the college coaches will be back out at some various tournaments across the Midwest that are high school tournaments, which is new also. So, again, a little bit better because it's high school teams that have practiced and likely played with each other in some form or fashion already this summer or in the spring and practicing leading up to the summer months. But a little different, you know, not that elite level of talent with every high school team, whereas a lot of these shoe teams have been built solely with elite level talent, whether the first player off the bench or the best player in the starting lineup. So a little different opportunity for coaches this summer. I think that there could be changes as this new recruiting calendar and these new recruiting opportunities for coaches are being figured out with changes in the overall college basketball landscape. Couple baseball notes here in the first segment. This is a little unexpected. Josh Rogers of New Albany played at U of L baseball standout, even played a little basketball his senior year at New Albany. He got what I would call an unexpected call back to Baltimore to pitch in a relief role for the Orioles on Friday. You know, he's been a solid minor league player. He's had an opportunity last year with the Orioles and earlier this year, but you know, it has not been his best minor league season. Been solid, been okay, has not been his best minor league season, but he gets a call up unexpectedly. I understand, I don't think Josh was expecting the call necessarily either, although when you're at Triple A and you're a pitcher and the Orioles are where they are, I guess nothing should surprise anyone. But he gets a call to pitch on Friday, had a ninth outing in relief innings. He allowed two runs against the Red Sox. He pitched 4 1/3 innings of relief pitching. And again, he I think his ERA 8.51 in 11 AAA starts this season. So he's back, you know, to a little break here. I mean, really, this is a break for him to get back to the major leagues this season. The Orioles have retained him on the roster, and right now, as of right now, he's scheduled to be the starter Wednesday night when Baltimore plays at Oakland. So a nice breakthrough again for a local player and Josh Rogers to get a Major League Baseball pitching opportunity. Not something you see every day. Didn't know if it would come again, at least for him this season, but the Orioles need some help, and for Josh, those days count. Getting opportunity and Major League Baseball experience at that highest level. So, again, a nice relief outing. I guess what happened earlier this season as far as the minor league ERA doesn't matter. Take advantage of what's in front of you, and we'll see how he does in what is believed to be a role as the starting pitcher Wednesday night when Baltimore takes on plays at Oakland over this coming week. Wednesday night, again, is the game that he is scheduled at this time. You know, that can change in Major League Baseball, but he is scheduled to be the starting pitcher in that game Wednesday night. Also, another note, Drew Ellis of Jeffersonville, another U of L baseball product, he had two home runs on Saturday for the Jackson Generals, a Double-A team, obviously, in the Diamondbacks, the Arizona Diamondbacks organization. So some of those local guys continuing to have success at the minor, and of course with Josh getting a breakthrough back to the major league opportunity as well. So big stuff for him. That's a look at the headlines for this Monday edition of the program. We'll head to a commercial break. When we come back, IU insider Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star, he joins the program. We'll talk IU basketball, we'll talk recruiting and more to get the week started with some IU flavor here on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back on this Monday program. Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star is with us. As always, we talk IU basketball and more in this segment. Zach, welcome into the program. Great story, by the way, on Jerome Hunter recently for the Indianapolis Star. And let's start with Jerome Hunter, somebody that obviously came into IU with big expectations. I'm not so sure that the type of high school career and recruiting profile, we'll call it, that he had coming into Bloomington wasn't overshadowed a bit by Romeo Langford being a late addition to that recruiting class and some other in-state players as well. But he came in with somebody that I thought had a lot of potential, not just for the college game, but down the road, not a one and done, but down the road, maybe professional basketball opportunities for him. And that was obviously derailed greatly by what's been termed a lower leg condition, with the details pretty scarce since that point. But you had a great piece on Jerome. Maybe you can kind of highlight, preview that piece for somebody that wants to read it. But he's a very interesting piece of this team, potentially, if he's able to rehab and return at some high level next season for this Indiana team.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably the biggest question kind of chasing IU around this offseason is what – realistically, can Indiana expect from Jerome Hunter, if anything? I think you were right. I think it was just kind of inevitable that everybody else in that recruiting class was overshadowed by Romeo Langford last year. But I remember seeing Jerome Hunter at IU's team camp right around this time, two seasons ago, when he was there with his Pickerington North team, and just thinking, who is this guy? You know, he can score inside, he can score outside, he's long, he's athletic, he's got a decent shot on him. And basically what my understanding kind of was in doing more research on him, reporting more about him, he didn't play for an affiliated AAU program, so he wasn't getting, you know, as much access to kind of the high-level events and the invite-only events and things like that. So if you're not getting a chance to consistently see him against, you know, the other players kind of in his age, or not his age range, but more his kind of skill range, you're not able to kind of measure him up from a rankings perspective. But he was still a top 50 player coming out of a very competitive environment. We can go down the list of really good players that have come out of the Columbus area in the last, you know, 10 years or so. And I think what really kind of bumped his stock was the word that got out about him, you know, last fall. Because I don't know if people know this, but NBA types, you know, people, and not necessarily always front office people, but scouts and, you know, people like that will come through college practices, especially in the preseason, not just watch games. And, you know, the word that kind of got out about Hunter was he looked just about as good as anybody. You know, that obviously Romeo was clearly the best NBA prospect on the team between his skills and his potential. And everybody knew Juwan Morgan and what he done already, what he could bring, you know, how he could improve, how he needed to improve from a pro perspective, but that there were a lot of people that were like, this Jerome Hunter kid, you know, we don't know if he's necessarily like a first-round pick ever or not, but he's going to be a really good college player. He's got a lot of tools. He looks good. He looks, you know, advanced for a freshman and all these different things, and then he gets when he wins the gold practice jersey that Indiana hands out every week in the preseason. I think they handed out the whole season. We asked Archie Miller why, and he said he just made a whole bunch of shots, and then he kind of disappears because of the injury. And I think the important thing at this point, probably the most obvious sort of important thing to point out is it's not an injury. You know, Indiana, Archie Miller continue to call it a condition, and there's a difference because an injury is kind of a thing that you suffer, and then you mend it, you rehabilitate it, and you recover from it. The condition potentially is something that you have to treat. It's something you have to manage, and it can go, you know, it can go away. But it's not like a torn ligament where you can say, okay, by this date you should be doing this, and by this date you should be doing this. And, you know, these are your marker points clearly established over the hundreds and hundreds of torn ligaments that have been treated in the past. I think that for a long time there was a hope that as he ramped up basketball activity that Indiana could start talking more sort of optimistically about where he was. And Archie Miller wasn't painting a totally bleak picture when he talked about Hunter at Huber Farms. He still said that there's a lot of encouraging signs with what he's able to do on the court and conditioning. He's still working through the treatment plan that Indiana's mapped out for him. But he also was saying things like he's not anywhere near ready to be called 100% again, and it's not going to be till July or August that we're able to make a more, you know, sort of definitive determination about his future and that kind of thing. And that sounds a lot more ominous. That sounds a lot more sort of, well, geez, is anything guaranteed for this kid, or is he, you know, is this very much just like a, we're going to have to wait and see and do, you know, and hope for the best that we can kind of situation. We know he's already had a couple of procedures, and we certainly have at least seen him, you know, on the court and doing some different basketball things. I think Cliff Marshall's tweeted out either some photos or videos of Hunter kind of getting through some work. But you still are concerned that, you know, it's not a year on, but it's, what, about 8 months on now, and it feels like Indiana is still kind of, and Jerome Hunter are still in kind of this holding pattern in terms of knowing exactly what they can kind of talk about expecting from him. Now, this could all be gamesmanship. You know, this could all be Indiana trying to sort of muddy the waters and not let people start really thinking that Jerome Hunter is going to be a big piece for next season. But it does seem, for all of his potential, like there's still a big question mark next to Hunter. And if there is, then that's a big question mark for Indiana's roster, which, as we've talked about many times, needs a lot to go well to replace Morgan and Langford coming up this season.
Yeah, and I guess for Jerome Hunter, and again, you can read Zach's full piece on Jerome Hunter at indystar.com/sports, but I guess the good news that we can pull from this, at least for right now, without knowing a lot of details about the condition or about even his rehab, is that he is active again at some level, doing some sort of workouts. I don't know how much of it's basketball, how much of it's strictly off the court, trying to get your legs back or your conditioning back to you somewhat underneath you after being out of the game. No matter what the injury, the condition is, when you're away from a sport, a physical activity that long, that obviously is a change to you. But I guess the good news is, if there is good news with Jerome Hunter right now, is that maybe there's progress because he's more active than what he obviously was this past season.
And I think you point out something important there, and I'm not trying to be the one that's sort of throwing a dark cloud over everything either, but the other important thing to remember is, you know, wherever Jerome Hunter was when he kind of first got sidelined by this, you know, even if he does, let's say, get back by preseason, you're talking about a guy who hadn't dribbled a basketball in anger in, you know, 2 years, essentially, because he hasn't played a game since, or a year and a half, because he was wanting to play the game since his high school career ended. So, you know, it from Indiana's perspective, listen, there is virtually no scenario where Indiana's better off without Jerome Hunter. I think that it's clear that Hunter is a really promising player. It's, you know, I think you could even probably go so far as to say that if he could get back to full clearance and full go for this season, he would be option one or option two at least for Indiana from an offensive perspective. You know, I think he's that versatile and that skilled. And I've seen him play. I genuinely, this isn't just sort of listening to what Archie Miller said, or, you know, listening to kind of chatter behind the scenes. Like, I've seen it with my own two eyes, and I believe that. But, you know, it's also, by the same token, it's also important to remember that, you know, even if Indiana can get him back, he's probably going to need some time to really get his sharpness back as well. And that's maybe, if you're Indiana, what you hope he's at least get, you know, able to start doing now is, you know, if let's say that this is all kind of preamble to him working back toward being able to return to the floor in a competitive setting, what you, I think, at least hope he's doing now is shaking a lot of the rust off. Because, you know, it sounded very much like there was a period this winter when he really couldn't do much of anything at all. So shake the rust off, you know, get your instincts and your feel back. The way you shoot the ball, the way you handle the ball, where you like the ball, you know, what your sweet spots on the floor are, all those different kinds of things, timing on rebounding. And then if you can get back to full go, then you can really kind of ramp up a lot of the finer points. But, again, to my mind, there is not a scenario where Indiana is somehow better off without Jerome Hunter in in any sense, or even, you know, frankly, is like a just a sort of net zero gain if Jerome Hunter, for whatever reason, can't play this season, or even, I would say, misses, let's say, the first two or three months of this season, but then is able to return. Indiana's going to be a lot better for having Jerome Hunter back. It's just a question of if and when that happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking with Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. Zach's with us Mondays here on the program. Schedule announcement earlier today, John Rothstein had the scoop that IU's going to host Portland State in early December. That's not an announcement about the schedule that really moves the needle. I'll tell you what, in the offseason, when you're this far away from college basketball, a big announcement about a big game that Indiana, or I guess any program that has a terrific fan base that follows every move, is a big deal. You know, the 2K deal in New York, the announcement of the, or I guess the Jimmy V announcement recently that Indiana was in it. Then we had to wait and find out who specifically they would play. That stuff really, I think moves the needle for fans in the offseason and helps provide some very good content, newsworthy content for them. I don't know that a matchup against Portland State does necessarily, but those are the kind of games you have to fill in around some of the more interesting non-conference games on the schedule. With that said, where do you think Indiana's at with the schedule? Are there any of those big needle-moving announcements that could still happen with a reasonably big game on IU's schedule, or are those pretty much done? And how far out is IU from a complete schedule for next year?
I mean, I would be surprised at this point, based both on what we know of IU's schedule and just kind of, you know, where things stand from a general perspective, if there's another kind of, you know, really, really noteworthy game. We already know IU's going to host Florida State and Arkansas. We know IU's going to New York to play UConn. We know IU's got Notre Dame in the Crossroads Classic. That's a solid four. Again, it's important to remember that's four from 11, not four from 13. Because of the Big Ten 20 game schedule, I think some people are still kind of getting used to, you know, that is just kind of the default position. I think what's likely is you're going to see a lot more of the, you know, the games leaking out here and there where, you know, it's entertaining the way it always seems to happen, because Indiana never releases its schedule in chunks. Indiana will only officially release its schedule once it's mapped out in its entirety with most of your Big Ten dates and times announced, the only kind of wiggle room being those flex games where maybe it's a Saturday or maybe it's a Sunday or maybe it's the CBS game or maybe it's a BTN game. And so the most entertaining way for me is always when the local paper, you know, the head coach at, you know, Arkansas State tells his local beat writer, oh, yeah, we're going to Indiana next year. You know, we're going to play them on such and such date, a non-conference game, can't wait to go to Assembly Hall. And then that's kind of how it leaks out. But this is the time of year where that starts to happen, where what you start to really see kind of drift out into the ether is the games that make up the schedule, just from a, you know, just sort of a numbers perspective more than anything else. I mean, looking at Portland State as an example, you're talking about a team that went 16-16 in the Big Sky last year, 286 nationally per Ken Pomeroy. I'm not sure what their net was, but I mean, you look like the only thing that really jumps off the page, they were the number one offensive rebounding team in the country in terms of offensive rebounding percentage. So you're talking about like a team that you know, a lot of times what coaches like to do with those games is basically find a team that they're confident they'll be able to beat, but that maybe does one or two compartmentalized things well that they'll be able to say, okay, tonight we really need to focus on protecting the glass. We really need to focus on, you know, protecting the line. This team is going to, you know, it's almost inevitable. It feels like coaches always want to find one or two of those types of teams that run a full court press, that press a lot. And so that way what you can do is, number one, you can start to install, let's say, a press offense in November. It's not something you have to do right before you play Iowa. And number two, so a lot of your concepts are at least kind of in embedded early on. And number two, you've got film to look back on. And you've got film once you do play better teams that maybe are really, really good on the offensive glass. You've got film that you can cut up and say, this worked and this didn't. And these are the guys that we really need to step up in this game. And it's not just conceptual, it's not just hypothetical, because you guys have played a team that really challenged you in that area, and these were your successes, and these were your failures, and that's how it's going to translate to playing Michigan State or whomever. And so I think that's probably a lot more of what you're going to see is these games that just kind of, you know, wriggle free of the embargoes or whatever, and just sort of dump out into the morass, and you know, eventually you wind up with a complete or mostly complete schedule from a, you know, from just kind of a public information perspective, and then IU announces the thing sometime right after the Big Ten announces its dates and tip times. That's typically when IU is ready to pull the trigger and send it out as well.
Talking with Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. Romeo Langford, NBA draft Thursday night. Evan Daniels earlier this morning with a tweet that said Romeo is in Miami to talk to the Heat later today, and that he's going to meet with the Pelicans later tonight, and that he also in this process has visited Cleveland, Atlanta, and Minnesota. You track this stuff very closely in your beat coverage for the Star of IU, and I know Romeo, obviously that story continues to be a big part of what you're following. I don't recall, unless I've missed something, and I try to keep a watchful eye on it, but I don't recall since the NBA Combine really hearing much about Romeo other than he's out west. He's at Kobe Bryant's Mamba facility. You know, there are some workouts happening, but is it workouts for NBA teams? I've not really heard that. So to hear that he's meeting with people, that he's in Miami, that he's going to talk to the Pelicans later, and that also at some point in recent weeks he's visited Cleveland, Atlanta, and Minnesota, a lot of info packed into one tweet there by Evan Daniels. Have you heard any other visits or kind of behind-the-scenes stuff about Romeo and who he's been with or who he's met with, or is this kind of the first, this tweet from Evan, kind of the first update you've had on Romeo's whereabouts and what he's doing as well?
I think I've sort of heard some of the stuff that you mentioned, but broadly speaking, you know, I'm not sure, like, for example, how much he's been working out, and teams typically are pretty good about releasing, like, these players are working out for us today and doing this and this. Now, it's also worth pointing out that, you know, you bring players in for batch workouts, you're probably not going to put a lottery pick in there, you know, all the time. Sometimes you're going to want to isolate that player, have them do a lot of one-on-one time, whether it's on the court with the ball in their hands or it's you know, with coaches, with team personnel, whomever. I think what's interesting about Romeo just more generally, like, I mean, you mentioned teams there in, like, Cleveland, Atlanta, Miami. Those are three teams that kind of, like, can really run the gamut of where Romeo Langford could land. I think SI even had him going as low as 21 in their most recent mock draft. I would be stunned if he fell that far. I really would. I know he didn't have the freshman season people expected, but it's not a deep draft, especially at that position, and he's still got so many tools and so much upside and potential. But, you know, you talk about a team like Cleveland that's picking at 5. You have Atlanta that picks at 8, 10, and 17, but is also therefore considered a real candidate to try and move around in the draft, whether it be up or maybe even down. You know, that doesn't mention a couple other teams that I've heard linked with him pretty consistently, both through mock drafts and then also just kind of what's out there kind of floating on the water, which are the Pacers, who I think pick at 18, and the Magic, who I think have liked Romeo Langford for a while. The Magic have, I think, based on what I've heard, have done a fair bit of homework on him. And I think they picked just a little bit before the Pacers, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, I think that he's, it's going to be interesting to see where he falls. And yet I think there are a lot of players like that, you know, like, where does Cam Reddish go? How much do people, like, who buys into Jackson Hayes and at what point? You know, I've seen him linked, for example, to the Hawks a lot, as sort of like a high upside, but maybe decent risk pick. I mean, like, it's a draft that feels like it's got a lot of those types of players, even a player like Jarrett Culver, who I think a lot of people like. You know, there's still questions about, well, how high is the ceiling? Should he be a top 5 pick? Should he be a top 10 pick? Should somebody move around for him? You know, if somebody moves down, would he drop to them? That kind of thing. Because, you know, I think there are also a number of people, including maybe the Hawks, kind of jockeying for DeAndre Hunter, And it's, you know, for a while it looked like Hunter might be a top 10 pick. Now it seems unlikely he'll fall out of the top five. Whereas Cam Reddish, for example, all of a sudden you'd feel a little bit surprised if Reddish weren't in the top five. Whereas, you know, if we had this conversation 3 or 4 months ago, Reddish was supposed to be a top three pick, maybe at worst a top five pick. So it's after you get past, like, basically Zion, Ja Morant, and probably R.J. Barrett. I would be surprised if the Knicks passed on, you know, Morant or Barrett. I think Barrett is basically kind of the one that's expected to fall to him at three. There, it feels like there are so many sort of different threads that this draft could take, and I think that Romeo is going to get caught up in a lot of those, because I could see a world where he does drop a little bit because people look at it and they say, well, we're just not sure about the numbers he put up, and we're not sure if the injury was the cause of a lot of that, or if there are wider concerns about his mechanics and his long-term upside offensively. But then I can also see a team, you know, somewhere late in the lottery just saying, yes, but look at all of his physical tools, and if we're the team that cracks that and we're the team that gets that out of him, then imagine what we'd have. We'd have a great player on our hands. And, I mean, like a team like Atlanta, for example, Travis Schlenk was in Bloomington personally multiple times this season. I would imagine to look at Romeo Langford, Atlanta picks at 8 and 10, you know, maybe Atlanta could be a team that kind of, you know, pops in at that area, pops in at that sort of like late lottery spot and takes a flyer on him. It's going to be hard to peg where a lot of these guys go. And I think Romeo Langford's a poster child for that.
Zach Osterman with the Indianapolis Star. Good stuff as always from Zach, who is with us Mondays to talk IU, a lot of IU basketball and more. Love watching the College World Series yesterday. Louisville has some Southern Indiana connections, so it was fun to watch them, even though they came up short against a very good Vanderbilt team. Hope to see IU, and I know we've talked about this some, hope to see IU make a return trip to the College World Series at some point under Jeff Mercer. We enjoyed talking, I know, and I know you covered it closely, IU baseball, over the last number of weeks of the season, especially here on the program with you. And that is just a fun event. I really try to carve out some time and watch College World Series games, especially as it gets deeper into the bracket play. But love the format. I think there were 27 or 28,000 people was the attendance for that Louisville-Vanderbilt game on Sunday. But just a really cool environment. It's a place I've got on my bucket list, my sports bucket list to get to someday. So maybe we can head out that way when IU makes a return someday under Coach Mercer.
Yeah, I mean, it's, first of all, you're talking about the atmosphere. I mean, it's the same reason the Big Ten holds its tournament in Omaha, even though obviously Nebraska and then, you know, maybe a little bit Iowa and Minnesota are the only kind of local teams that would really kind of feel connected to that geographically. It's just because the city loves the sport so much and the city will get so invested in it. And, you know, out in Omaha, the College World Series is annually kind of the biggest thing that comes through from a sports perspective. You know, sometimes they'll host the NCAA tournament, and obviously that's you know, in basketball, and that's big, but Omaha is kind of culturally their thing, you know, that they don't have professional sports. Obviously, they have the University of Nebraska, but Omaha and the College World Series is the thing that they get to embrace every single year, regardless of who's there. I think, you know, from Indiana's perspective, I think it was good, frankly, to see, again, and I think we may have had this discussion last week, but to see Michigan win a game out there, I think it's good for the conference, and I think that Indiana needs another team to kind of go with it, if that makes any sense. Again, I think we may have talked about this last week, but that, you know, if Indiana is going to become a nationally relevant program that goes up from just being in regionals every year, which is really, really good and is obviously a lot of a massive improvement from where the program was 10 years ago, it needs a stronger Big Ten. And, you know, as much as other coaches in the conference may look at it and say, well, now, you know, now Michigan has really laid down a marker, they can also go into recruits' living rooms and say, you can play in the College World Series in the Big Ten. You know, we hadn't had anybody in 29 years go to Omaha, and now in the last 7 years, we've sent two teams. They've both won games out there. We'll see what Michigan continues to do, you know, over the course of this week. But it's getting easier and easier to sell the Big Ten as a place where you can realize a lot of your potential and a lot of your sort of ambition as a college baseball player. I thought it was noteworthy this week that Ethan Verkrumba, a player from Indiana that is signed with IU, said that he turned down, I think he told the Bloomington Herald Times, he turned down a $500,000 signing bonus with the Braves because he believes he can be a first-round pick under Jeff Mercer, that if he comes and he develops for 3 years, he can be a first-round pick when he goes back into the draft as a junior. You know, you just didn't see a lot of that. Like, you didn't see guys turning down that kind of money to go to college, certainly not to go to Big Ten programs. And I think that it's just, it continues to kind of point to a steady sea change around the sport and the conference that it's going to be on programs like Indiana and Michigan and Nebraska and Minnesota to continue that sea change and to continue kind of pushing it further and further forward.
Zach Osterman with the Indianapolis Star. Zach, again, thanks. Great stuff. We'll do it again next Monday.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Always. Zach Osterman with us Mondays on the program, IU basketball and more when he's with us. And we'll head to a commercial break. We'll come back and switch gears and talk some local sports headlines with Chad Gilbert. He's Charlestown's athletic director and an IHSAA executive board member. Lots to get to as we wrap up the Monday show coming up next right here on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
We are back. Final segment on this Monday program. Chad Gilbert, Charlestown's athletic director, IHSA executive board member. He's always with me on Monday. We talk a lot of local stuff here in Southern Indiana sports with Chad when he joins the program. Chad, I know you're a basketball head all the way around, so you were deep into the NBA Finals, I'm sure, last week. And, of course, OG Anunoby gets a ring. I don't know that he'll treasure that ring at the level he would have if he was still contributing like he was at one point earlier in the season for the Raptors. But nonetheless, the NBA season is over with, and another guy with IU ties can claim an NBA championship ring.
Well, those championship rings don't come easy, Matt. So he's going to cherish that ring. And the higher up, the harder they are to get. Stanley Girard played with me at Southern Indiana. He's the head coach at University of Indianapolis. One of his former players is on the Toronto Raptors as well. So you have, you know, a GLVC Indianapolis tie as well as someone else who's getting a ring with that. Those things aren't hard to come by. But as far as the game goes, Toronto was the best team. I mean, Golden State was beat up, and Toronto did a lot of the things really, really well. But the heart and the character that Golden State put out there on the floor, that just the heart of a champion, not going to quit, and came down to a last shot, you know, with two max contract guys injured. You got Steph Curry, a game winner, to win it. And that just goes from the heart of a champion and what it takes to win. And it goes back to what we've talked about all. It's the culture of your program that you create, that you're not going to be defeated. And you're always putting your best forward. You're playing against yourself.
Chad Gilbert is my guest. I know that switching gears locally, talking some summer basketball, which we want to do, there's a lot of different angles we can take that. You know, it's laid back. June is the opportunity to play practice for high school coaches to be hands-on with their team and get maybe an early look at the season for next year. And it's always interesting to see how local coaches handle things. You know, sometimes you got a player missing for this or that, players playing multiple sports, players having opportunities to go to a camp or elsewhere. You know, Romeo Langford, I don't know that he ever played a game in June with New Albany High School because of all his recruiting commitments and other things, USA basketball opportunities and things he had the opportunity to attend. And from time to time, you see players miss games, so you not always get a full read for next season. But some coaches coach just like they do during the season, hands-on, lots of set plays, calling out defenses, using every timeout available. other coaches may not even sit on the bench. They might sit across the gym and make some mental notes or just watch things from a different perspective on the bench, but have an assistant coach lead the actual direction of the team. So summer basketball kind of is what it is, but I think you've got to look at Silver Creek, Chad, with what they've been able to do this month. They've played in a lot of showcases and events, and of course Trey Kaufman has had his recruiting explode even on another level with offers recently from IU, Purdue, and Xavier, and also Jeffersonville. Coach Luce has taken his group around the Midwest to various college campuses to play some summer basketball games, and of course he's doing that because he knows he has a lot of talent, both older and younger, on the Red Devil roster for next season. So when I think about next year, there are a lot of highlight points and things to get excited about from just little old summer basketball, but those are two things that stand out to me.
Well, man, I think you're right on that one. And we can do a whole segment, a whole hour on summer basketball, the positives and the negatives. I think you brushed on two of the positives with the Red Devils and the Dragons going around and letting their guys being able to be on that campus, get a feel for what that campus is like, and then having those coaches see those guys, see how they interact with their teammates, see how they interact off the court, see how they interact one-on-one. Maybe they'll get a scholarship offer. Maybe they won't. I saw where Trey Kaufman has an offer from Indiana, an offer from Purdue. They've been at both of those camps. However, they just didn't see him out there and say, who's number 33? Who's that number six out there? They knew who Trey Kaufman was before he came to campus. And that was just kind of the icing on the cake to get him on there. I think that if you get to those things, you get an idea of where you're at, and you get to see how the whole process works. So I think if you've got players on those type of guys' levels that the Red Devils and the Dragons have, it's great to be on those campuses. It's great to be seen. Now, however, scoring 35 in the summer league and putting it on Twitter, I don't think you're going to get a scholarship out of that. I think that the more that you play as a coach with those things, I think that's an opportunity to show kids why they're not playing. You give them an opportunity to go out there and play because it doesn't matter. There's always that kid who thinks he should be starting. Let him go out there. Hopefully they can play, and that gives you an opportunity to make your team that much better, give you that much more depth. But a lot of times it shows you and it shows them why they're not playing. The one thing on it is I think you can get a lot out of it. What we did when we did it was we played early on, you know, walk around, man, we were 34-4 in the summer. No one cares about the summer. Like you said, Romeo never played a game. That, you know, that was a big deal in our eyes. The later we went on, the summer didn't matter as much. We wanted to – our workouts in the morning is where we really wanted to get better, where we really wanted to sharpen up, where we really wanted to bring our younger kids along and make them feel involved in the team. And I think that's where the summer comes in important on that one. And I think it's important that you just do that in June, that you let kids have some time off. And, you know, your elite players in July, they're going to be out on the circuit. They're going to be out getting seen. And when they're out getting seen, they need a little rest time. So, you know, you come back in August, you give them a little time off in middle of September, maybe pick it up because it's a long grind for these kids.
Chad Gilbert, my guest. Chad is Charlestown's AD, also an IHSA board member. And, again, lots of positive, lots of negatives, getting on college campuses and getting the chance to get an early start and participate for next year and getting your young kids involved. Those are just a few.
Matt, one thing on that I want to add is the coaches. Hats off to the coaches because they're not getting paid for the summer. They're doing this for free. They're doing this to put their kids in the best position possible to be successful. That just shows how much these coaches care about their kids, how much they care about their program, and what they've put into it. So, you know, hats off to the coaches who are out there working extremely hard this summer.
Chad Gilbert, and again, lots of positives. We've kind of hit on some of them. And negatives always, and that's true with any sport, I think, but the opportunity to get an early look at the season, and Chad, I think we're, as we look at things right now, it's just amazing year in and year out. The great storylines, the great players, the players from this area that are recruited at a high level, we're on quite a roll. Southern Indiana's on quite a roll. As you go to Indianapolis to represent our area in these IHSA board meetings and other places, you should go with your chest pumped out, man. It's a good time right now for Southern Indiana, and not just in basketball, but in multiple sports.
We are extremely proud of our region down here in Southern Indiana. What our kids have done, what our coaches have done, our schools, how they've represented their athleticism, but how they've represented with class. And to see the success that we've had in Southern Indiana, it seems like it's going to continue to grow. It used to be that Southern Indiana was Bloomington. And, you know, our area down here, Clark, Floyd, Harrison County, was kind of like part of Kentucky. Now I think throughout the state, you know, we're getting more respect. We're getting seen that people down here can play a little bit, and they definitely can. We can hold our own, you know, in many, many, many sports that are out there available. It seems like we always have a team that advances and does well throughout the state tournament.
Chad Gilbert is my guest. Chad, before we let you go, one thing I know we want to mention, and it doesn't get a lot of love. These people don't really get a lot of love or credit with all the work they do behind the scenes, but we have a number of new athletic directors at area schools here in Clark and Floyd counties that are either taking over or will take over later this season in advance of next school year. So much work, as you know, as the AD at Charlestown, and so many behind-the-scenes things that go into the scheduling and all the operations and the financial stuff that make all sports, not just basketball, which seems to dominate our conversations, but all sports possible. So welcome some of the new guys to the area.
Well, you know, without question, we lost a huge, huge staple in the AD community with Donnie Unruh retiring. You know, good luck to Donnie. He's someone who brought a wealth of knowledge, a wealth of experience. And if there's a coach out there who's needing assistance, I would call Donnie Unruh to coach the basketball with me. He's got the desire still. He's got the passion, and he's got the knowledge. He would be an excellent pickup for some staff. But for him to go out, I think he did an outstanding job at New Albany High School. But they put somebody in his place that I think will do a great job as well. I think B.J. McAllister will step right in. B.J.'s well-connected throughout the state. He is extremely organized, and he is someone that has a vision. And I think that's one thing is all ADs, you have to have a vision of where you see your programs going, where you want them to be, and how to get there. And I think B.J. has all of those things checked off the list. And you add that in with Donnie Unruh coming in and giving him a little bit of tutelage along the way, I think they're in a great position to be successful for years to come.
Chad Gilbert with me always on Mondays. Chad, thanks for the chat. That will wrap things up for this Monday edition of the program. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. right here on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.